You know, I love Mark. Now you see, these are some of the kind of people that I fuse myself to, because they're wonderful, and you know the word says iron sharpens iron, and so he and I, through the years, we've become iron sharpening iron, and we're in this fight together. And so I want to challenge and encourage you that are here and you that are watching online to join the fight. If you don't know how to join the fight, you can go it'll be at the bottom of your screen, conventionofstates.com. Sign the petition, sign up to volunteer, to get involved, get engaged. And I want you all in the fight, because the problem, the reason why Satan has so much place is because we've given him place. And so it's time for the people of God to stand up and get in the fight, because no longer is the fight everywhere. The fight is in front of you. Are you going to get in the fight, or are you going to run from it, or are you going to pretend that the fight is not happening? You can't pretend that the fight is not happening for long, because the fight is coming to you. And so this is the day that you have to prepare yourself. No matter what it takes, do your research, do your homework, but prepare yourself to engage in the fight spiritually, financially, just even in the natural. You have to be prepared for the fight. Israel's fighting in the natural. Think about how long you've just seen it as a spiritual fight. It's been a natural fight for just as long as it's been a spiritual fight. But many of us have been so heavenly minded that we have been no earthly good. But it's time for us to put on the whole armor of God and get in this fight and push back against the gates of hell and tell hell no. Tell the devil, you can't have our children. You can't have our families. You can't have our nation. We will remain one nation under God, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. That is where we will remain as long as there is breath in my body. I am going to fight for our nation. I am going to fight for my God, because the kingdom suffereth violence, but the violence take it by force. And I am going to take it by force if I have to. If you bring it to me, I'm ready for it. What are your questions for Mark? You got a question right next to you, Pastor Nancy.
For a major presidential candidate to embrace and endorse and promote Article 5.
Did you guys hear that?
He said, what is it going to take for a major presidential candidate or president to endorse an Article 5?
So Governor DeSantis did several years ago. So he's on record. He was asked about it recently and said, so, I mean, he's a major presidential candidate. He's not the presidential candidate right now, obviously. Vivek Ramaswamy, ringing endorsement for it. So two of the second-tier candidates, as I would describe everybody other than Donald Trump right now. That's just, by the way, that's not a political endorsement. That's just the reality of where we're at right now. Two of them have done it. I spoke to Trump several years ago, very briefly. When I say I spoke to Trump, I mean it was at an event. We got a chance to have maybe 90 seconds, 2 minutes together. Obviously everybody wants Donald Trump's attention, hard to get his attention. I literally had to kind of push through Secret Service to get in front of him. I had a donor that had spent $100,000 for me to be at this event, so I had to get in front of him. Couldn't very well come back and say, sorry about the $100,000. And so I said to him, you know, the way you get Donald Trump's attention is you got to say something he likes first.
Right.
And so he's very close friends with Sean Hannity, and Sean and I have known each other for a lot of years. And I said, President Trump, your good friend Sean Hannity told me to say hello to you. So that was my opening. He's like, oh, I love Sean. He's so great. And he said, what do you do? And I said, you know, I run an organization called Convention of States, and we're working to call the first convention to take power away from D.C. and give it back to the people. And then you got to always, with Donald Trump, you play your cards the way he wants to hear them.
Yes.
And I said, you know, Mr. President, you had a line in your first inaugural address. You said that your administration represented a transfer power, not from one party to another. And not even from one presidency to another, but from Washington, D.C. to the American people. And I said, that was the best line I've ever heard in an inaugural address.
Yes.
And of course, Donald Trump likes it when you say that.
Yes, he does.
And and I said, and by the way, if we could hold a convention of states, you would be the first president in history who was actually alive and potentially participating in a convention of states. And he said, I like the sound of that. So that's the last I heard of it. I have some people who've talked to him about it. Whether he'll say something about it or not, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I would welcome any major political figure talking about it.
Amen. I saw some other hands. There's another hand, blue hat.
Hi, my name is Breck Henderson. I'm a retired Navy officer, nuclear-powered submariner.
Thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you.
I say that because my last job was with the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which oversees safety at nuclear power plants. That's not something that's in the Constitution. That's not one of the 17 enumerated powers. The point I'm trying to make is there's a lot of stuff that the federal government does that everybody likes. Social Security is not constitutional, for example. If you go talk to Daniel Miller, he's the president of the Texas Nationalist Movement.
Right. Got a lot of respect for Daniel.
Right, and he will tell you that that things are so broken that you can't fix them, because you're never going to get a majority of people who say, yep, we all agree that Social Security is not a responsibility of the federal government, therefore we ought to get rid of it. But if you don't get rid of all that stuff, you haven't made any progress. So the question is, why don't we just succeed and start over? That's what Daniel Miller wants
right.
to do.
Look, again, I would say the difference between me and Daniel, and I say this all due respect, because I love what they're saying. I love the narrative. I'm gonna say something that's a little bit brash. I live in the real world. And if Texas, first of all, the United States is not going to let Texas secede.
Right.
What you're talking about is violence.
Right.
There's no peaceful secession of a state that's going to take place in the United States right now. So you're talking about violence between Texas and the United States government. And there's no provision. I know people talk about Texas retaining the right to secede and all that. But we have to talk practical reality. Texas cannot stand on its own militarily. So look, the United States has nuclear weapons. The United States has fighter jets. The United States has submarines, right? All of this stuff. Texas doesn't have any of that stuff. And by the way, we don't have the budget or the economy to support any of that stuff. In regard to nuclear regulation, this is really important. It makes a broader point than just nuclear regulation. Every state has the capacity to do almost everything the federal government does. In every state where there are nuclear power plants, and you know this better than I do, there are state regulations around those nuclear power plants. There are not only federal regulations. In fact, for example, in California, the regulations are much, much stricter at the California state level than they are at the federal level. And so every state has the capacity to do almost everything that the federal government does. Environmental protection. If every state wants to have its own social security system, they have the ability to provide those. And in fact, every state does have its own benefits system. So I would argue, first of all, whether people like it or not, every state has the ability to do all of those things on their own. So I think one of the things that people think is, oh, well, what we're proposing is you just shut down all of that stuff. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not even making a comment on which policies are right and how much welfare there should be, whether there should be social programs to support people. The states can do all of that stuff, and they would have the money, a lot of the states, to do that if we weren't sending all that money to Washington, D.C. The problem is we send it to Washington, D.C. They administer those programs. They skim off the top. They give benefits to their friends. One last thing I want to say is I think there is this fantasy, I would call it, that we have to fix everything or we can't fix anything. That's not true about
right.
anything in the world ever,
right.
never, and it never has been. If you have problems in your marriage, you would never say, honey, let's sit down at the table for breakfast. We've got to fix everything that's wrong with our marriage today or we can't fix anything. You would never say to one of your kids, every single behavior problem that you have has to be fixed right now, all at once, all together, or we can't fix any of it. You would never say that about anything. In a business, I've run lots of businesses, large and small, from little to billion-dollar businesses. There's always problems. We never sit down around a board table and say, okay, guys, we got to fix absolutely everything or it's not worth fixing anything. Every change that's good in the world comes in increments. Souls are saved in increments.
Right.
I was saved in increments. It doesn't all happen at once, and I just don't think that's honest. And I had a mentor who said to me one time, one of the wisest things I've ever heard, he said, reality is an acquired taste. You may not like it. It might seem bitter to you. When I look at how our legislature works in Texas, I don't like it.
No.
But it is what it is, and I better walk into that building knowing what it is, not having a fantasy and expecting it to be what I want it to be.
Right. There's one right here, Pastor Nathan. Pastor's coming over.
And then we'll need to focus off on the screen, but we'll continue. Yes, ma'am. What's your question?
Mark, could you speak about, so far you've talked about the goal. Can you talk about the mission?
Yeah, I think this is important. Thanks for asking that question. So we have a goal, which is to call a convention of states, propose amendments, get those amendments ratified, start to get the federal government under control. For us who are part of this organization, that's actually an interim goal. The mission of Convention of States is to build the largest self-governing grassroots army in American history. There's a thing that I saw when I came out of the Tea Party movement and started to build this organization, which is we're not a self-governing country anymore.
No.
We're not self-governing people anymore. So many people in this country say, well, it's up to my city to do that stuff. It's up to my state to do that stuff. It's up to my boss to do that stuff, right? It's up to my pastor. Pastor, this is up to you to fix all this stuff, right? It's up to my church to fix that stuff. Self-governance means that we take that on ourselves.
Right.
And we are an extraordinary nation in human history to have done this, to have decided that we want to be self-governing. And so our activists in Convention of States, they usually come in because they hear about COS.
Yes.
And COS, I don't know a better way to put it, it's sexy because we say what you can do is you can get your hands around the throat of the federal government. You can stuff it back in the constitutional box. That sounds good, right? If I say to you, what I want you to do is go to your city council meeting and pay attention to everything that happens. People are like, that doesn't sound very exciting, right? So we have this big, giant goal that we're working towards. But in the process, what happens is people come in and they get trained on how politics works, on how their state legislature works, on what it means to lobby. They learn how to run for office. They learn how to run campaigns. They learn how to have influence. They learn how to be self-governing citizens. So that's what we're doing. Importantly, I would tell you, we have built the largest self-governing citizen army in the history of the United States of America. Over 5.3 million people are involved. We have volunteers in every single state legislative district, every single congressional district in the United States of America. We participate in every election, in every city, in every state. We're electing people to school boards. We picked off two of the Harris County school board seats this year, before they turned it, they took that over. Thank God they took that over. Two wasn't enough. We elected the last delegate in the Virginia House of Delegates that turned that house into a Republican house. By the way, the last person elected there was a Convention of States district captain. We had 150 people in that district. They made 1,200 calls to low propensity voters. In the recount, she won by 115 votes. So COS is doing this kind of stuff all over the country. The mission, you'll see on our buttons, it says it's more than a convention. The mission is to build a self-governing grassroots army. And if you come in, you're going to get that and more. And one last thing I want to say is we built this organization not as a forward-facing Christian organization, but in our hearts, we are a Christian organization. We practice servant leadership. We got, I don't know how many people, hundreds and hundreds, maybe over 1,000 people in Bible studies all over the country now. We're training people and building a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ. We have five full-time pastoral staff ministering to people all over the country. We are a God-based Judeo-Christian organization.
Amen, amen, amen.